Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you are joining us this morning. We have had this conversation before, and because of some of the news I watched this week and some of the things, of course, that I found on the internet, I realized that this particular problem gets bigger all the time, which is very heartbreaking to me. This is about the abuse that is rendered to a spouse. And something that really surprised me is the fact that it's often not one-sided. It's often a part of life. It's often reciprocal. It's often, it's most of the time when we talk about it, we're talking about a husband versus a wife. The husband is the aggressor, and it becomes a life of that in a lot of cases. But sometimes, believe it or not, it's the other way around. Sometimes the wife is the aggressor. So I did some research and I found a lot of all those cases. But what really, really bothers me is that it still, in this day and age, seems to be ignored, or nobody wants to get involved, or people look the other way. You know, there was a time in our history when men talked about their wives like they were their horse, their possession. They talked about them like, I read one article, this was last year, when we did a show about couples and spousal abuse, and the fact that it took us girls so long to be able to feel, in some cases, and sadly still not all, equal. We fought for equality for everybody, and somehow or another, us girls kept getting pushed to the back. I sometimes wonder if in one of my lives I was a suffragette, because I don't believe in that. I think we are all equal. There are days when I look at my dog and the way he tricks me and the way he gets his own way, and I wonder if he's not more my equal than I ever thought he was. The point is that equality is important, but kindness should be there regardless of whether you think somebody's equal to you or not. And that doesn't seem to mean anything today. Obviously, I fight for the rights of women. Obviously, I believe that we're equal. Obviously, I believe that we stand beside each other. I have never stood behind my husband. I stand beside him. And in the workplace, I feel the same way. So I feel pretty strongly about the fact that we should be looking out for each other, and imposing harm on somebody that you supposedly love and want to share your life with doesn't even make any sense to me. If you have a bad temper, you need to jog more or jump on the trampoline more or punch a punching bag more. Your hostility should never be taken out on somebody that you profess to care about. So I'm going to open up the lines, and I want to share with you very quickly one of the reasons that we decided to talk about this today is something that I watched on PTV News this week. And then when I tried to find it yesterday so I could get all the real scoop, I couldn't find it. But what I did find were hundreds of other things that are pretty much equal to, if not exactly like, the situation that I saw on the news. And they showed a video of a man pulling his wife by her hair in a 7-Eleven or some kind of a short stop store or something, and smacking her and beating on her. She's on the ground, and he's just yanking her around by her hair. She's screaming. He keeps swatting her in the head and punching her in the back. And nobody, I mean, the video is going on because it's set up in the store. Nobody tries to help her. Nobody intervenes. No shoppers, no owner of the store, no manager, no nobody. He just finally quits and gets up and walks away. And she's still sitting on the floor trying to gather herself and stand up. And that's all the video that they show. Well, a few days later, and I could be wrong about these points because I couldn't find the story again, they're both found dead in their car. And ironically, when I Googled that couple in either a murder, suicide, or double suicide or something is found in car after video is taken of them fighting, and a whole bunch came up, not one or two, a whole bunch came up, which I was like, what? And in some cases, they took their children with them. So I want to talk about this today, and I want to be honest about it. I don't want to, if you'll excuse the pun, pull any punches. I want to be honest about the fact is why this goes on, number one, why this is, in some cases, almost acceptable still in 2014, and what we're going to do about it. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning, Rainey.
Good morning.
I'll have to be careful so I don't fall off of my soapbox this morning.
No, this is something that, as far as I'm concerned, cripples the United States. We're supposed to be one of the greatest countries on Earth, and we have one of the worst records with regard to spousal abuse here. It's horrific. I mean, you have it culturally in other countries, but when it's something that's done culturally, and you have women that are born into it. Not that I'm saying it's right what's done in other countries, but it's cultural. It's accepted. It's the way everybody's brought up and everybody's under the same guidelines. And we see some of the things that are done to women in other countries as being immoral or inhumane. But the way we do it here in this country, everybody recognizes it's wrong. And yet we still can't seem to stop it, even though culturally here in the United States, everybody realizes that, you know, that a man doesn't have a right to smack a woman or beat her up or anything, and yet we still haven't been able to get a handle on that. It's so prevalent in our society.
Well, before we say anything else, let's talk about just that. Let's talk about the fact that the fact that it's prevalent, the fact that we don't seem to be able to put a stop to it, which would be the perfect scenario, but we also walk away from it. We also hide it under the carpet. We do a lot of things that are even, in my opinion, more deplorable than the act itself. First thing, and we've talked about this before, if there is an altercation in a family, husband and wife are fighting. Sometimes the wives can be, a pretty good opponent against their husband. So they both get the crap knocked out of them. And the cops show up. First of all, the cops are supposed to be our enforcers. They're not supposed to be our social workers. They're not supposed to be able to intervene. I realize now that we've got, what do they call them, the people that work for the police department, and they are supposed to be able to come in and intervene and talk people into a better place and stuff like that. But that's not usually who comes, and there's usually one of those in each police department. So if there's two fights in a night, which happens around here on a Saturday night all the time, one couple goes, gets a little bit of that additional help, and the other couple, you know, just suffers through with the neighborhood cop that shows up and says, now, can you guys try to get along? He sees the bruises and the cuts and the abuse going on, and he realizes that it probably happens on a regular basis, but he truly doesn't know what to do about it, is my guess, nor does he have any kind of way to deal with it right then and there. What I was told by a local West Palm Beach policeman who's been on the force for a very long time is when they leave a scene like that, they make a phone call. And the phone call goes to somebody who is supposed to touch base with this family. And I said, and then do you get a follow-up report? And he said, no. I said, so how do you know anybody ever goes to see this couple or intervenes or does anything? He said, honestly, and I said, please. And he goes, I don't.
Wow.
So it's an issue. It's an issue. And, of course, a lot of times there's drugs and alcohol involved. Us three women have been around long enough to realize that that's often the, you know, the catalyst that brings out all the fact that you couldn't pay the electric bill, the fact that your husband stayed out late one night this week, the fact that you're not getting along already, and then you drink on Friday or Saturday night and all hell breaks loose. So we know that, and I think the powers that be know that.
Well, why don't we clarify, because this is such a big topic, and there's two different scenarios, and you're kind of crossing them right now. You have spousal abuse, which is pure spousal abuse. You have a married couple where either the man is continually suppressing, intimidating, and harming the wife, or vice versa. In some cases, the man is the one being abused because he's a gentle giant and he won't touch his wife, and he's married to this little thing who beats on him all the time. I mean, I've seen these true stories.
Me too.
It's not always the woman, but I would say 95% of the time it's the woman, but not always. And then you have situations where you have married couples that are, like, codependent on each other. Maybe they have substance abuse problems, and they get into what's called mutual combat. I think that we need to differentiate, because those are two different scenarios. Spousal abuse and mutual combat are two different things. In mutual combat, both parties just act badly when they're high, when they're drinking or they're doing drugs or they're coming down from doing drugs. They just act badly and they get violent with each other. That's not what we're talking. We're talking about spouse abuse when you have one spouse that suppresses the other spouse, where they actually are fearful of them. They find it almost impossible to get away because the person threatens to hunt them down and kill them if they ever leave them. And there are people that are controlling like that. This is a very, very, this is prevalent more among men than women. But because of the shift in power, for lack of a better word, where women are going into roles of authority, women are being recognized as equal as far as being equal consideration. Not that we're as strong or as anything like that, but that we can participate equally in jobs. We can hold similar type jobs to men, and in many cases, women excel when you're not talking about just brute strength. And even when you're talking about brute strength, women can do things to compensate for their size or whatever, you know. So the bottom line is men are becoming there's always been like an idea of the man as being the breadwinner and the leader and the head of his household and all this. And in the last, you know, 50, 80 years, that's been crumbling. So a lot of men it's almost like a social mental disorder where they feel they have to control their wives in order to feel that they are this king of the castle type of personality. And they do it through abuse, through making this individual fearful of them and subservient to them. So I've watched some of these shows where they talk about the psychology behind it, But a lot of it goes through a lot of these men's upbringing, where the father instills in them unrealistic, unreasonable, and unkind attitude towards their role in a family. They are taught that they're not equal. They're taught that women are not equal to them and that they have to keep women in line. And because they can't keep women in the workplace in line, it's actually an aberration where they treat the women in their lives very badly as a way of making themselves in their own head feel that they are, in fact, in charge of their life. And it's a really serious problem. But it goes to some of the old, I don't want to say old-fashioned, I want to say outdated ideals about men's and women's roles in society. And a lot of it still has to do with that.
Well, the whole point is that it is about equality. I'll get it. You can go lay down. It is about equality. That's why I talked about that in the very beginning. But there are different scenarios. As you mentioned, there are many different scenarios where somebody is being abused. The same with children. Sometimes a child is abused because mom and dad are fighting with each other and they can't get rid of their hostilities on each other. But the dynamics of it, even though they're all different, and you're right, there are men, there are women who just want to be in control, and it's all about that, and it's not about anything else but that. But it still all boils down to the fact that they're hurting each other, and they're ruining their children's lives, and they have no way to really do something about it. There's family counseling, there's marriage counseling. We've talked about this before, there's 211 that you can call. There's women in distress buildings all over. I think I mentioned a couple Christmases ago taking Christmas gifts that we had collected to a women's in distress building. And it was Christmas morning. We started out on that trek at about 10 o'clock in the morning. And in these places where there are not supposed to be any men, almost every apartment where kids and the mom came out to collect the gifts when I beeped the horn and we handed out gifts from the back of the truck, there was a man standing in the doorway of these apartments. So the cycle is vicious, and you're right, there's different kinds and there's different kinds of scenarios. But the point is that there doesn't seem to be any bona fide answers, regardless of how it starts, whether the man is just an abuser, grew up in an abusive home, and turns to abuse when he becomes an adult, yes, there's that category. There's the category of drug use and alcohol use and the fact that they just take out their inner hostilities because all week they swallowed it. And then it just comes out in piles all over them when they're under the influence. And then, of course, there's the fact that a lot of men grow up thinking that they are better. I hate to use that term, but it's the truth, better than the woman in their life, that they're in charge, they're the king of their castle, etc. And then, of course, there's the person that we've talked about many times that has some kind of psychosis, and they're just abusive. They may be abusive in every part of their life. Maybe they're a boss someplace, and every young girl that comes in to work for them gets called names or gets called stupid. Donna, who talks on our show every now and then, who is a nurse, she posted a really, I thought it was appropriate this morning on Facebook. He doesn't have to hit you for it to be abuse. He can degrade, humiliate, blame, curse, manipulate, or try to control you. Know the signs. Don't be abused. I thought that was pretty appropriate for this morning's show.
Yeah,
Monica, I would love to hear from you because you have actually mentioned to me that you would like to do a show about this, which leads me to believe that you have something to say.
I've really studied the psychology of the men that are abusers, and the reason why I studied it, and women, of why they allow this to happen, And the reason why I studied it is because in my first marriage, it was pretty much like that for 17 years.
Wow.
And, yeah, and my mother and father had a very, alcohol was involved, and they had a very abusive marriage as far as my dad would beat up my mom. And I seen my mom have, you know, blackened eyes, bruises, but in my mind, at that time, being little, this is the psychology of me. At that time, because of what she was doing, I blamed it on her. It's your fault. If you wouldn't have been drinking and binging, Dad wouldn't have hit you or thrown that potted plant at you or tore up the house, things like this. So that's the psychology that I grew up with. So when I started getting in relationships, you know, first of all, it has to do with low self-esteem. A woman who will accept that kind of behavior has low self-esteem. And being brought up in a family where, you know, an Italian family, the man is the head of the household, what he says goes. So as I grew up, I had the same idea. Man is the head of the household, what he says is the law, and I just follow along. Until you get in a relationship like that, and you just want to live, you just want to live and have a nice, peaceful relationship. You don't expect to be knocked around or hit or anything like that. But when it starts happening, it's not good. But I learned after. It took me a long time, and I tried to get out of that relationship several times, but he always came back. I would kick him out, he'd always come back, or I'd move away, he'd find me, things like this. And it was also a matter of, I had 5 kids with this man.
Wow.
And it was a matter of, he never paid me a dime of child support when he did leave. He would go off and find a girlfriend or whatever, and when she was done with him, he would come back. And because of my weakness at that time, I would always take him back. First of all, I was struggling to support my 5 kids, never took a dime of welfare money, food stamps, anything like that. So, not that I didn't try, but for some reason I could never get it. But I had to get my strength and control and power and believe that I had it in order to finally stay away from him and not keep going back because of financial reasons or because he also was abusive to my children and controlled them, their every step, every move, so
wow.
that when he would leave, my kids, all boys, would go crazy. I mean, they were like the barn door was left open and all the animals ran out doing all kinds of crazy things out on the street. And, you know, here's me, this weak woman who was beat up, and I couldn't control my kids, so I would always, you know, when he wanted to come back, I would say, yes, I need help, you know. So it took me probably 16 years of that marriage to realize what was going on and finally say enough. And the things he used to do to me was, you know, the typical controlling. You don't need any friends. Take care of the house. You got your kids. This is all you need. So I had no help from anybody to see, to let me know that this is not normal behavior. You know, as far as I was concerned, it was normal. This is the way I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with the hitting and the choking and being pushed into a wall and just controlling. Here's, at that time it was the early 80s, here's $50 for groceries this week. You better make it last.
Wow.
Oh, my God, for five kids and you?
Monica,
and, you know, and
did,
then.
Monica, how did, what? You, how did you come to the realization that things needed to change? I mean, was it just something that evolved in you, or did you see a show or read a book or hear a story about
no.
somebody else? I mean, what was your aha moment that, wow, I can't go on like this anymore, or... When did you start evaluating and realizing what was going on and not to participate in it anymore?
This is going to sound crazy from, you know, that crazy witch doctor on Wednesdays, and this is probably more than I wanted to tell you, but one night, he went to bed, I started to go to bed, and I stood there over him, and I was looking at him. And the night before, he had actually pushed me out of bed with his feet. I hit my head on the night table, and it caught the corner of my eye, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, and I had, he sucker punched me and all these things. But anyways, that night, I stood over him, and I thought, now this is going to sound crazy, how easy would it be for me to just grab a knife and kill him while he's sleeping? This way I don't have to deal with him anymore, and he won't hit me, and he won't hit the kids, and blah, blah, blah. And that was my aha moment, and I'm like, I got to get out.
Yep.
We're done.
Yep.
You know, I thought, I am not going to go to jail or take the chance that I will miss, and he'll get me.
Wow.
So
How old were you then when that happened?
I was, let's see, it was 1992, I think. 1992. So I was like 40.
Mm-hmm.
No, wait.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I was like 35 or so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I married him at 18.
Right.
So, but yeah, it was
a
crazy.
Lot of women that go through abuse never get to the point. I understand. I'm glad that it shocked you, because it shocked you into moving into the person you really were. You really had a suppressed personality for all those years.
Yes.
Because you were allowing him to tell you who you were than being the person that you really were inside. You know, you became very submissive. So the fact that
Absolutely.
You even and entertain that thought is what saved you, because it
right.
alerted to the fact that you couldn't live like that anymore. A lot of women never get to that point, and they end up being victims until, sadly, they either do lose their lives, or they just, they never come into their own at any time. So that fleeting thought, thank God you didn't act on it, because we know many women that do act on it and do end up going to jail, sadly. But it allowed you to get the self-esteem and the courage to move past that situation.
Right.
Let me ask you something, Monica. During all that time, before this happened, was there any intervention from your mother? Did your mother ever say to you, you can't live like this? Did your mother ever recognize what was happening to you? Was she around?
Yes, she was around. My mom and dad were always together. And, you know, at some point in that time, you know, their drinking had stopped and you know, they loved each other and all that. But, no. First of all, in the old-fashioned Italian way, where I lived in Chicago, you never, ever called the police on a home domestic problem. If you got a problem with your husband, you take care of it yourself. Same thing with my parents. Nobody ever called the police when they were having one of their knockdown dragouts. And you don't talk about it to anybody. You don't tell anybody about your dirty laundry. So, no, of course, I did not tell my parents that my husband, you know, was abusive. No way. Of course, they would have intervened, but I didn't let them know because it was embarrassing, too.
That's one of the classic symptoms, too, is that you see women that are involved in these, I hate to use the word stereotypical, but this type of spousal abuse where it's the man that's suppressing the woman and controlling her and everything. And you have even business women that will go to work and wear high-collar shirts or long sleeves or whatever because they're covered with bruises. And nobody that they work with, nobody, you know, here in their jobs, they're in very high responsibility positions, and people don't even have a clue that in their own house they're terrified of their husbands and they're getting, they're getting attacked on a regular basis because it is a source of embarrassment. And most women, you know, because outside the house they're in control, and then in their own house they're terrified of their own husbands. And it's such a, like I said, it's something that's very common in the United States.
Yeah, that was pretty much the scenario with me. I was a restaurant manager, and I had, like, I don't know, 20-some employees, and I was the head honcho, and then I would go home, and it wasn't a matter of being, it didn't happen all the time, okay? As far as him abusing me, it was more like, what am I going to walk into? What kind of mood is he in? I was always walking on eggshells, you know, that kind of stress every day. The same thing with my kids. You know, now that they're all adults, they said the same thing. And, of course, they have nothing to do with their father and haven't since we finally got rid of him.
Right.
It was a matter of walking on eggshells every day.
What about neighbors? Did neighbors ever hear what was going on and make any police reports back in those days?
Nothing like that ever happened.
That happens more now than the actual people that are going through it. I think you're right. I don't think they very often call anybody or tell anybody for many reasons, like you said, embarrassment, it's private, all those kind of words pop into people's heads when they think about what's going on like that, and they keep it a secret. But I think what's happening today is it's really easy to make an anonymous 911 call. And in a lot of cases that you see on the news and that we read about in the on the computer and in the paper and stuff are about somebody else realizing that something is going on and they just make that anonymous phone call. Otherwise, I think there would be very little intervention. What about the kids? What happens when the kids go to school and maybe one of the kids have got a bruise or something like that? Was there ever any intervention there with schools?
Yeah. And It's Department of Social Services was called on us a couple of times, but it never went any further than coming to check your house, make sure you have food in the refrigerator, and talking to all the kids, and even then...
And that was as far as it went, right?
That's as far as it went, other than, you know, they just didn't show up at the door. They'd call and say, we're coming. And then, you know, of course I look back on it now and I'm like, oh, my God, why didn't I open my mouth, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, we covered it up.
Yeah.
I did, too, because it was embarrassing that things like this happen. And it never occurred to me that my children could be taken away from me. But, yeah, on an intellectual level, I condoned it. On a me level or psychological level, I was just trying to survive. You know, I was just trying to survive and have a roof over our heads and get food on the table.
Yeah,
and that's
you
get a big part
up.
Of the problem is that a lot of, and I keep going to women because it is the more common scenario, but so many women don't speak up. It's one of the reasons why law enforcement doesn't like getting involved in spousal abuse cases, because a lot of times the women won't press charges. That's why there's laws today where the state presses the charges. It's taken out of the hand of the victim, because women are one of two things. They're either not financially set to be on their own, so they stay in this horrible relationship just because they have to keep food on the table, or because they're afraid of leaving the man. The man's actually threatened them, or they know he's going to hunt them down. So they choose not to take legal actions that are available to them because they're afraid of what that will spark. They're afraid of things getting worse if they look for help. And that's a terrible situation for somebody to be in, you know, to be terrified of the situation they're in, and then be more afraid of asking for help because they're afraid it's going to make things worse.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you something, Monica. If you were given the opportunity to talk to a room full of 20 to 25-year-old women who you knew were, they came looking for help because in many cases, they love the man they married. The man they married is the father of their children. They also are afraid that maybe it's them, it's not him, that like you thought of your mother, if mom wouldn't do this, dad wouldn't do that. What if you got the opportunity to speak to a room full of women like that? What could you tell them now, where you're at now in your life and what you've been through? What words do you think you could choose to make these women understand that it really isn't them? And, yes, none of us are perfect, and, yes, there could be reasons why somebody could get mad at you once in a while, but you don't deserve to get kicked out of bed. You don't deserve to get sucker punched. You don't deserve to be told that you're, you know, anything other than a good person. So what would you say to that room full of women? Are you there? Monica? Shelley?
Yeah, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, but I don't know what happened to Monica. Are you there, Monica?
You still see her on your dashboard? Maybe she muted her phone?
No, she didn't mute her phone or anything.
Sometimes with my phone, I have to hit the end button, and I don't know if she's on her cell phone or a landline.
She's on a landline. She's way up in the mountains in North Carolina. So,
okay. Well, on my landline, I have to hit the end button, and it'll search for the signal, reconnect me to the show. I don't actually hang up, and then it'll reconnect me to the show, and I hit, like, the flash button, like I was actually taking another call, and then I get right back into the show. So maybe her landline.
I don't know. Who else do I have on the phone? Is this you, Elise?
Yes, good morning, Shelley and Rainey. I'm listening to this, and, you know, I've done a lot of work with fundraising with shelters, abused women. I work with a woman in New York City who now has her own TV show, and she had started up an organization many years ago, National Organization Women's Safety Awareness, and that's what she does. I used to book her at colleges, universities, to teach the women in college, although she starts with them younger. She does these speaks in, you know, middle school, basically about how to be independent and how not to ever allow anyone to verbally, physically abuse, you know. And my husband can be pretty verbal sometimes. And, you know, so I'm sitting here listening just, wow, because it really goes on in more households than we'd like to believe. And it comes in a lot of different forms, not just
absolutely
physical.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And the fact of the matter is that the words sometimes last longer than the altercation. Sometimes, let's just say anybody's angry. Say you're mad at your kid, and sometimes you can do something that, you know, changes everything. I think Monica had to hang up. Her phone died. She just messaged me. So sorry, same problem as last time when I couldn't get through. It won't let me call back. Just let everyone know that I said the point of me saying all that is women need to find their power within themselves. And my mantra at the time, which helped me, was I don't deserve this. And I said it often until I believed it and was able to get out. So those
wow.
are amazing words of wisdom, Monica. I don't know whether you can hear me or whether you're back on the computer and can hear what I'm saying, but that's awesome. And by the way, you're still on my dashboard. It's like you never hung up. So it must be just your phone battery died because there's still a connection with us. So, but you're right, Elise, as well. I think that often in words, there's something about words that keep playing through your head and playing through your head and playing through your head, and it's hard to let go of those. So I would agree with that as well. But the words, even though they hurt and they stay inside for a long time, don't usually cause your demise. So, you know, there is a big difference. There is a big difference. But I don't think any of us women should tolerate anything but respect and good treatment. I said to my husband last night, not about him, because our relationship, although after almost 47 years, has certainly had its ups and downs. He's never been abusive to me. But I said to him last night, I said, you know, at age 65, I want to say this. And if I meet with somebody, if I do something for somebody, if I'm friends with somebody, and I don't have their complete respect, I'm done with them. I'm done with them. I don't care really who they are. But it took me all these years to get to this place because there was a time when Rainey the Pleaser would do backflips, and that's a sight
right.
I want you to know, to get somebody to care about me and to get somebody to be my bestie. No more. I am in a place now, like I said to Shelley the other day, it's nice being this old because I can say whatever I feel like saying and I don't give a shit who likes it. But the point of fact is, you have to get to this place, and the sooner, the better, because nobody deserves to not be respected for who they are, what they do, what they can do, and what they can't do. So
that's right.
Well, see,
yeah.
I was in an abusive marriage also. The difference between me and a lot of other women is that I didn't have the low self-esteem. So I found out after Charlie and I got divorced, which we were only married for 6 years, because I chose to take myself out of the situation. At no time was I ever afraid of him. I divorced him because I was sick and tired of the constant volatility. He would get so angry about stupid things. He would pick fights over stupid things, and he was vile. His language, I mean, he would call me words. He would even call, you know, use the C word, which is, to me, completely unacceptable. There's nothing that a woman can call a man that even rises to that level of disrespect and just crudeness. And he was vile when he would get angry. And after 6 years, I just chose not to be part of it anymore. It angered me. But I found out after we got divorced, a couple of his friends came to see me who were now my friends, and they told me that they were, thank God I had finally cut him loose. And then they told me how he used to beat up his girlfriends. And see, he never went there with me because I wasn't afraid of him. But he tried to control me verbally. He was extremely verbally abusive. It did wear me down at times. He did try to separate me from my family and friends. And for almost a year of our 6 years, I was pretty isolated. He had successfully isolated me from my family and friends. But because I wasn't afraid of him and I didn't continue with it, I just ended up getting my family and friends back into different situations, which used to really piss him off. But I didn't realize at the time that he was trying to control me. I just thought he had a bad temper, and I tried to help him work through it. And then I finally got tired of it because he wasn't trying to get his temper under control, and that's why I chose to leave him. But the big difference between me and a lot of the other women, if I had been fearful of him, he probably would have gotten physical with me because I found out he was physical with his other girlfriends before he asked me to marry him. And he was looking to... What?
Sorry. No, I just wanted to say, you know, you mentioned at the beginning when you started talking about, you know, most women have low self-esteem. But I, you know, I'm sure that's true. But I think in a lot of cases, it's not so much that some may have low self-esteem, but I think it's more that situation where they're not making the income and they don't know how to put that food on the table should they leave. I think that's a big part of why a lot of women stay on and don't know how to get out. Not
they
so much
feel dependent.
Self-esteem.
They feel dependent. You're right, Elise.
Yeah.
They feel dependent. And they feel like there's no place for them to go. And what am I going to do? And who's going to want me with 3 or 4 or 5 kids? And I have no education. Most of us back in the day when Monica's talking about, it was getting more, it was getting easier and more acceptable for women to go to college. But let's don't forget, for many years, we weren't even allowed to go to school. So we've come a very, very, very long way. But the point of fact is all of these kind of things, these feelings of shortcomings, have been drilled into us for various reasons. And it isn't who we are. We are the other half of a dynamic duo. We are. And without us, there would be no anybody. Without us, there would be nothing.
There's a really good book. I don't have it in front of me because I'm not in my house now, but I know the name of the book. I don't know the author. It's called The Feminine Mistake, and I highly recommend it. It's about what we're talking about. It's about everything my mom drilled into me. You have to be independent. You have to have a career. She spent so much time drilling it into me. I think I started thinking about what I was going to be when I grew up at, like, 8 years old. I still haven't figured it out, but that's okay. I've really tried to figure it out. I'm on the track now, finally, at 46. But, you know, it's interesting because even those who learn from their mothers, sometimes they still can't, you know, follow through with all the lessons learned, but at least it's ingrained in us.
An interesting point, and that's the other thing, I guess, and now that you're mentioning that, and I think it's a very valid point, that's another reason why I didn't feel trapped, because I was the breadwinner of the family. That was one of the things that caused a lot of our fights and that would get Charlie so angry that he couldn't hold on to a job. For the first 3 years we were married, he went through something like 20 jobs. He was constantly getting fired because of his attitude, because he was very disrespectful, very angry, and he would pop off at bosses left and right and then get fired. And he would always make up excuses that he get fired for a different reason, and then I'd get a call from the boss, and I would find out what really happened. And he was just horrible. You know, he very disrespectful, very angry all the time. But the bottom line is I had a good job. I was making decent money. We didn't have children. So in that regard, number one, I was very comfortable with who I was, and I didn't tolerate Charlie's bad behavior. We never got into mutual combat because he never hit me. He was just very, very aggressive and very verbally abusive, always cursing, always fighting that way, and always trying to put me down. But I felt that I could get a job and support myself, so I never felt trapped that way, and I didn't have children to look out for. If we had had kids, I might have fallen into that same pattern, because now all of a sudden I have to make sure I can provide for the little ones. So I was in a good situation, but I was certainly in a better situation than a lot of women who get involved with men like that, because I was only dealing with myself, and I wasn't afraid of him. So those are two key elements that were different in my situation.
I'd like to line them all up with Michael Vick and, like, give them the biggest wedgie of their life, hang them by a tree and just knock them around. And
you know, that just gave me a visual that's going to make me laugh the rest of the day, at least.
Yeah, you know what my visual is? My visual is what? You doing backflips for the rest of the day. I see you doing backflips, seriously.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a pretty sight. I want you to know that right off the get-go. So, but the point is, I think, and one of the reasons that I felt so strongly, and I will continue to do these kind of shows, is the fact that many women get talked into, get coerced into believing that they deserve whatever is on their plate, and they're not. If there's peas on your plate and you don't like them, throw them down the garbage chute. And that, you just have to do it. It's not, this is the only life you get. I mean, we've talked about reincarnation, so I guess I shouldn't say that. But for this one, this is it. You have to make it the best it can be, and you shouldn't live your life in fear. You shouldn't live in a place where you always feel belittled or not as good as the man standing next to you. And if you feel like you're standing behind your man, step up. Step up and stand beside him, because you're just as important, if not some days more important, in that duo than anybody. Again, without us, there would be no us. Last time I checked, a man can't carry a child. And of all the things that are in the world today, what is the most important job that is done? That's it. That's it. Reproducing. Otherwise, there would be no more us. We only live a certain amount of time. Without reproducing the children and without nurturing the children, even if you don't reproduce, you're the nurturer. You're the one that does what it takes to make the world function on a level that has caring and love in it. Not that there isn't a good lot of good daddies out there, because there is. But you have to be able to put yourself into perspective. You are very, very, very important to the world the way it is set up. So if you are in an abusive relationship, get out. Get out. Ask for help. There's lots of help out there today. It's not perfect. It doesn't have all the answers in some cases, but it's better than living your life like that. It's hard enough when there's love, there's no abuse, people worry about money, people worry about illness, people worry about all the other things that are in the world. You shouldn't be worrying about that as well. You know, Shelley, how long were you married to Charlie? 6 years, you said?
Yeah, a little over 6 years by the time the divorce came through. We actually lived together for about 4.5 years of that time, and then it took about 1.5 years for the divorce to come through because he contested it in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. So you applied for the divorce?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was done.
And in your other relationships, was there abuse?
No.
Just
and
Charlie.
The whole thing is that when I dated Charlie, he was, just just to say this, I've said it on the show before, 25 years after we got divorced, Charlie found me on Facebook, and we actually have a very friendly relationship right now. He's apologized for what he was like. He said that he always regretted it. It took him a couple of years to get over some of the anger, which had nothing to do with me, by the way. They stemmed from another situation. It took him years to get over his anger. He ended up going through counseling and all that. So he's a decent person now, and we've become friends. But during the time we were married, he was pretty relentless with his verbal abusive treatment of me.
Shelley, doesn't that upset you, though, at the same time? I had a boyfriend who, you know, did the wrong things, not abusive, but just, you know, character-wise. Years later, he was apologizing and telling me how he learned all the lessons, and it's almost like you want to smack him, like, all right, thanks a lot.
Oh, no,
you know?
I found it very healing. I thought it was great for me because I found it as closure because it always – you have to understand, I was head over heels in love with Charlie. And I'm not anymore, and when I met him, we had dinner when he found me, and we're just good friends now. I mean, we did have a lot of common ground. That's why I fell in love with him. But, no, I found it is very healing, and it gave me closure because it always bothered me that he blamed me for the divorce. He was very vocal about that. I was a horrible wife. I was a horrible this and all this, and now he meets up with me 25 years later, and he says that he recognized all the good things that we had done together and all that I did for him and how supportive I was of him. So it was nice to hear that. So for me, it was closure. It was healing, and I was also happy to see that he became a nicer person. He's not anybody that I would want to be married to today because he's still, except for the fact that he became nicer, he's still kind of stuck where we were 25 years ago, and I've really evolved. I've gotten into a lot of things. I've learned a lot of things, and but it's easy to talk to him now, and he's even interested in some of the research I'm doing, so we have a nicer relationship. But no, I liked it. But no, when Charlie and I were dating, he was a gentleman. He was so romantic and so sweet, and the first time he was ever abusive to me, it shocked me because I never saw that in him when we were dating. So it wasn't something that attracted me to him. It was something that literally caught me off guard once we got married. So, no, I never repeated that in other relationships.
Well, that's good. At least you walked away with a good sense of self and you learned what you want.
Right.
So good
right.
for you.
Well, I think that's something else that us girls do very well. And that's learned from our lessons. Not always. Some are harder to get in. But as a rule, we do learn from our lessons
well,
pretty quickly.
We know a couple of ladies who were in terribly abusive first marriages and then got married again and got into abusive second marriages. So there are some women that don't break that, whatever attracts that type of a man into their experience. Something in them doesn't change, you know, and it's important for women. They have to realize that, number one, they don't deserve it. They have to realize that they are, regardless of what their talents are, everybody has something worthwhile in them, you know, to offer, and it doesn't have to be to society. It can just be in their own family, but everybody has worth, and everybody is equal in their ability to, you know, to contribute, whether it's a little or a lot, no matter what it is.
I wanted to just ask, because I see we're running out of time, if there are any resources for any women who are kind of stuck right now and just, you know, any kind of, I'm trying to think myself because I know I've worked with some groups like this. I just can't think right now.
There are actually a lot, and all you really have to do is either look online or look in the yellow pages. In the yellow pages in the back of the phone book, there are women in distress organizations. There's the Jan Moran place that's in Pompano. There's 211 that you can call and get some help right away. There's a lot of places. And the point is that you have to remember that you're worth it. I think self-worth is imperative, not just that you're beautiful and that you're talented and you're this and you're that. You can have all those attributes, but if you don't think that you are worth it, you won't be. So we are out of time. I want to thank you. Thanks for joining us, Elise. It was nice talking to you. I want
to
thank Monica.
Great to be here.
Yeah, I want to thank Monica for sharing such a, must have been a difficult story to share. And thank Shelley for her input and wish everybody a great day. We'll be back tomorrow for Recap Day. I hope you will join us. Go out there and make it a great day, everybody. God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.